everybody, welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. I'm Ty Tuesday. With me, as always, is Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef. We're going to be covering part two of, I forgot the name of it. The episode where Kyle looks in a bathtub.
Is this Protect the Coven?
Protect the Coven,
right. You know what? I'm okay with not remembering the episode title because it does not make sense. It's very early, so sorry if I have morning voice, by the way. I'm not trying to seduce the listeners. I just woke up. But yeah, we're going to be doing part two of Protect the Coven. Man, this is... They just decided the corporation was like a mistake, I think, in this part of the show. Yeah, they just were like, hey, we shouldn't have done that. Let's stop doing that.
It's like this episode and the last episode and a little bit the episode before. It's like they realized that, like, they didn't quite nail down exactly what their main plot was going to be. And they're like, well, we got to, if we want any of these plots to have an ending, we're going to have to start killing off some of the subplots. But instead... just all of the plots are getting bad endings that make it feel like the subplots shouldn't have any.
There's only like two episodes left after this.
Yeah.
Correct.
Holy shit, no wonder they had to kill those fools. Okay, well, let's go.
Yeah. So where we left off was Delphine capturing the landscaper and tying him up in somehow did this. He was not incapacitated. He had a cut on his hand. And somehow little old Delphine was able to like overpower him. Cannot overstate how much bigger than her he is. And he's tied up with string. He's in Spalding's doll room and she has strung him up from the ceiling with like string or cord of some kind, which is already a little confusing. But then on top of that, like he's in a chair, which I don't know why you would do that either, because that just gives people more leverage to stand up and leave. And then she's got one of his feet in her lap. And there's like, okay, it's really hard to explain unless you've seen it. She's sitting directly across from him in another chair. She has his foot between her knees, and there is a belt around her knees holding his foot in place. And you might be thinking, well, Liz, that doesn't make any sense. He could simply just pull his foot out of there. Correct. You are right. He could simply just pull his foot out of there, stand up, and then ostensibly roundhouse kick Delphine in the face. But he doesn't. They act like he has been fully incapacitated in every faculty, and he is functionally helpless to her. Spoiler alert, she will best him.
Hey. I just realized something. Mm-hmm. They're in like the super attic, right? Like the highest part of the house, because that's where Spalding was relegated to, like up a bonus flight of stairs. So that means like she had to get him to follow her into the attic in the doll room. And she was like, that's where the bandages are. And he was like, okay. And just followed her the whole way up. Because ain't no way Delphine like dragged him up the stairs and then up the attic stairs without anyone noticing or hearing.
Yeah, also, like, the stairs just to the regular second story is a spiral staircase. Can you imagine dragging someone who's twice your size up a spiral staircase if you're, like, a little old lady?
I cannot.
I cannot either. The great news is she does.
A little old lady who spent all day cleaning. And, like, doing work, you know, but yeah.
And feeding people poop, yep. Mm-hmm. That's maybe the most important thing that she accomplished throughout the day was feeding people poop. So she starts torturing him. He doesn't fight back or stand up for some reason. She just gets to do whatever she wants for some reason. And after she's done just like murdering him, she like cuts his toes off and then like disembowels him, I guess, because it just kind of fast forwards to the afterwards. Spalding's just chilling in the corner and is like, you feel better. Like, he says it very antagonistically. I need to front load this, saying, Spalding's about to be real weird in this next scene. I'm going to spoil it right now. It's because he's doing a bit, and it is a really good bit. I am extremely pro Spalding in this episode. Spalding kicks ass in this episode. I say that because he's about to be weird and racist for a second to make Delphine think that he's on Team Delphine. But he is, in fact, just treating the stupid racist lady like she's a stupid racist lady and completely pulling the wool over her eyes in the dumbest and funniest way I have ever seen this show do it. So he's like, do you feel better? Like, he says it really antagonistically, which is really funny. And she's like, holy shit. And then she's like, wait, you can talk? You have your tongue back? What's up with that? And he's like, yeah, I'm dead. I'm a ghost or whatever. And she's like, what the fuck? And he's like, yeah, don't worry about it. I'm a ghost or whatever. And she's like, oh, well, as you saw me kill this guy. Like, she's just like stammering, like trying to explain herself. He's like, no. I think it's good that you're a serial killer. You did great. You're so cool. You're so good at this. Do you want to do a side quest for me? And I mean that literally. And she's like, yeah, what do I get in return? And he's like, I'll tell you how you can kill Marie Laveau. And she's like, ooh, yeah. I buy this immediately for some reason. And I don't remember if it's now or later when he reveals it, but the reveal of, like...
It is later. It is later also, so this whole scene is later, but it doesn't really matter chronologically.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I just am remembering it fondly from my own, like, memories, because it's so funny.
Liz, because it is the payoff scene of the whole episode, so I understand why you'd want to jump there, but... We're going to have to hold the listeners in their chairs for just another couple minutes.
Yeah.
We have to deal with Kyle. That's right. Kyle's here, baby. So Zoe is in the bathroom, fully invalidating everything Cordelia's been doing.
Mm-hmm.
Literally just like casting a little spell in a tub, like holding a candle over it. Like, it just looks like a nice bath, frankly. And Zoe's like looking at it like, tell me what's going on. Who killed Nan? And Kyle kind of walks up and... Yeah, it's a very, like, dog-like interest. Like, it's just kind of, he, like, crawls up and he's like, what you got in there? You got a, is there, like, a French fry? And, like, look at the tub. And Zoe kind of, like, is looking over the tub, and then there's just, like, a reflection of Fiona and Marie Laveau in the water. And Zoe's like, oh, my God, it was Fiona and Marie Laveau who killed her. And it's like, yeah, man. Like...
Why wasn't this immediately addressed when Nan died? Like, hey, is it possible the lady who wants us dead and has been actively killing us and or trying to kill us maybe killed Nan? Maybe we should look into that.
And has a vested interest in not having a powerful passive mind reader going around, possibly unraveling a plan on accident, which she did, and that's why she got killed. Like... Yeah, it's really it's a really bad mystery.
And this kind of, like, this is the second time that Zoe has done this, where Zoe's like, I'm going to investigate on my own, prompted, apropos of nothing. I'm just going to do my own investigation to get the answer that we all already know for herself, I guess. And then, for the second time, it will have no payoff. No payoff, because by the end of this episode, her knowing that doesn't matter. She doesn't relay that information to anybody. She just knows. Yeah, she just knows. She knows X2, basically. Just like when Fiona was the one who killed Madison, she got three opinions as to whether or not it was Fiona. And then once she'd gotten her third opinion, she was like, yeah, it was Fiona. Got it. So She does a bathtub ritual, which is essentially the same thing that the site does for our good friend Delia. So Delia being all fucked up about the site means nothing.
It seems way better, because whereas like the site is, I have touched somebody and I have visions of their past. This is literally like Zoe's like, hey, who killed Nan? And then the tub's like, okay, these two. And she's like, great. Thank you. Like, it's very cut and dry, open and close. No chance of you just like seeing all the parts where your husband was sleeping with a lady, but not the part where he killed the lady.
And we cannot overstate, because this will be important to me specifically, cannot overstate that the way Kyle is acting in this scene is not a grown man with all of his faculties. I need that to be just crystal clear. It's like a dog watching their owner cook a steak on a grill.
At best, it is a teen boy infatuated, acting like a goofy goober, which is what I'm guessing the direction was, because they have Evan Peters do that a lot.
Pick one American Horror Story. You know what I mean? Like, what
absolutely
are we doing?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you're so right, for the record. Like, that's so valid. I'm just giving like the one out I think they could have. It's still bad.
Yeah, like they truly, now that he like is quote unquote fixed, they can't remember whether he's supposed to like be a regular man or not, or whether he's like a little weirdo.
They're about to do some really stupid shit that is agonizingly like, well, an adult wouldn't like let that happen. So after they do the big bathtub reveal, the big murder reveal party or whatever at the tub, Madison comes in, and Madison is jealous now, I guess. Madison's nastier now. Bad news, everyone. Goes and is just like, are you taking a bath? And there's like a very strange tension, because they forgot about this plot line for a bunch of episodes, so it feels weird when they bring it back as like a core thing. Madison literally is like, come with me, and then plops headphones on top of Kyle and was like, don't listen, the adults are talking. And then just straight up, they like then argue over who gets him, like this whole thing of like, we agreed to share him, but you like him too much, and like, well, I'm sorry, I just like him in a normal way. And then Kyle pulls off his headphones and is like, no, I like Zoe. I can't, like that too, like a baby.
But you know, actually, like, can I? And also, like, it kind of gets really weird, because actually, too, the way Madison brings this up, he goes, oh, yeah, because so he's like, yeah, whatever. And she's like, okay, well, how about I just go down on him right now? And she's like, well, I wouldn't care. And then she starts doing, like, what? Like,
right? When he has the headphones on. It, like, she's always just standing there. Like, Madison, like, gets between the legs and is just like, well, time to do a blowy. And he's like, hey, well, hold on.
Also, like, I can't overstate, because we did not, thank God, we did not get, like, more scenes with these three to, like, see the unraveling of this. But, like, remember that, like, even though it's fucked up and evil, the show makes it seem like he prompted the sex with Madison when, like, he and Madison first bonded about both being dead and brought back to life. So, like, him being like, no, yeah, like, Madison, gross. Like, him being, like, weird and repulsed by Madison, like, she's, like, a predator or something, doesn't make any sense, because she was the only person who treated him like he was a grown man with, like, adult faculties.
Yeah, yeah. You're right.
And so, like, for him to be like, no, is super weird.
They decided to rewrite that, like, Madison was just being a little seductress and not like a normal human, like a human being relating to another human being, which is why it was like a workable plot line to possibly bring up in the first place. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's like, yeah, I love Zoe, but it's like, you're a kid, really. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't even make sense here, but it's whatever. That's life.
You love the one who treats you like you're a toddler, even though now you have your faculties back? Like, all right, weirdo. Like, even if, like, because I'm sure that, like, their reasoning is like, oh, well, he was in love with Zoe before he died. He talked to her for 15 minutes. 15 minutes prior to him dying.
They really are banking on this being, like, 2.5 months after you saw the first episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they're like, oh yeah, these two deeply, madly in love with each other. They have so much in common, like checks notes. They were both at a party for 15 minutes together one time. and both of their friends were involved in a bus accident, though one was involved in a different way than the other ones.
I've never had a show gaslight me so much and so badly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the gaslighting or the rehabilitating the image of real, actual, real life criminals that I hate more, but boy howdy, this season they were like overdrive in the back half.
Yeah, I think they truly just forgot most of their own like plot beats and they're just kind of like winging it. And they're like, I don't remember what happened and I'm too afraid to ask. So they just wing it. Yeah, and this, like, kind of, like, granted, I don't agree with the way she responds, but this kind of radicalizes Madison. She's like, what the fuck? Like, when he's like, no, I love Zoe, don't touch me. Like, all right, like, she's not wrong. I'd be confused if I was Madison, too. But this radicalizes Madison. She's already kind of radicalized because she wants to be the Supreme.
There was a normal middle reaction, which is Kyle takes off the headphones and goes, whoa, not right now. Like that. But that is just not in the possibility list for American Horror Stories. No, whoa, hey, whoa, not so fast. Whoa, hold on.
This, I know that they didn't give a shit because they didn't think this scene out at all. But like, this like completely removes Kyle's agency because this means that like he's just been like pretending to like be okay with being in a throuple now that he's lucid. And like, we know they're still like doing it because we just saw Delphine watching the three of them sleep in a twin size bed. So like, they're still actively doing it. And now both Zoe and Kyle, who are, you know, not maybe not fully grown adults, Kyle at least is. Zoe's, I don't know, maybe like in high school, I don't know. I don't think we know all of the girls' like canon age, but like they're old enough to make some decisions. Like none of them are just like, "Hey, I don't think the thruple thing is working anymore. We got to get Madison out of here." They're like, "No, we need to keep letting it happen and keep involving Madison in this. Like she's got to be. We're just gonna let resentment build up over time, even though two out of the three of us hate her." It's not a job. She's not a coworker. You can just be like, hey, we don't want to do this anymore. But that just means they've removed Kyle's agency even further and made him be like, no, I love Zoe. And it's like, all right, like literally this could have just been a conversation. Like this could have just been a conversation instead of it turning into this weird, I don't know. Like this is fucked up to say. Even like Twilight handled a love triangle better than this. If Twilight, where the bar is on the ground, is in hell for standards, handled a love triangle better, then you've got to seriously reevaluate your writing structure and your writing ability.
Yeah.
You know that meme that is like long dead, still a better love story than Twilight? This is the first time where that's not true.
Yeah, like, and I think a big part of it is they have these characters showing up doing all sorts of things, and the love triangle is clearly just like not important to them for those 99% of the time. So it just feels very weird when all of a sudden they're like, I've decided it's priority one who's fucking the corpse. Like it really like just comes out of nowhere when it's like, you were literally just doing a ritual to see who murdered your friend. Eyes on the fucking ball, Zoe. Like, come on.
Yeah. And I guess like I would maybe give it like a little more, I don't know, like grace if this was a show meant for like teenagers, like it was like Teen Wolf or something. But it's not. American Horror Story is rated TVMA. It's meant for adults. Like,
it's not Teen Wolf. I'm always saying this.
Yeah. It isn't Teen Wolf. Like
how far low the bar is. Yeah. It's like, okay, you're not Teen Wolf, guys. Come on.
Yeah,
yeah,
relax.
Get it together.
Relax. You're not
Teen
Wolf.
Are you fucking kidding? You don't have the acting chops of Michael J. Fox, I think, was in Teen Wolf.
Yeah, but like again, I can't I can't reiterate that enough, because I think sometimes I forget too when I'm watching it. I'm like, ah, yeah, this was like for like young adults. This was like a young adult show. That's why it's so bad. I'm like, wait, no, it's
no,
not.
It's absolutely
it's for
not.
Adults.
Yeah.
It's an adult show for an adult audience that's rated TVMA. yeah. Anyway, so we'll don't worry. I know you're all like whimpering, wondering if we'll get more of this. We will. This scene ends with Madison losing her shit and telekinesising Zoe and like breaking a mirror, and then after she breaks the mirror, Zoe's like, "You're such a brat." I'm like, it's not like she like chucked part of the mirror at you like a projectile. She just broke the mirror when you looked in your reflection. Like, at worst, that's like minor illusion. Like, it's not that big of a deal. And then like I don't remember which adult comes in the room, but one of the adults, maybe Myrtle, comes in and is like, hey, cut it out. Y'all are fucking up. Relax. Madison, you're being a little bitch. Relax. And then Madison storms out of the room, basically. I guess it has to be Myrtle. It has to be Myrtle, based on what happens later, because otherwise, what the fuck? but you know who we haven't checked in on in a while? Everyone's favorite boy, the Axeman, who is also a key element of this episode. I know what everyone's thinking. We have not seen enough of Delphine, Spaulding, the Axeman, or Kyle in this episode, or Hank's dad. Well, I have great news. This episode is all about all of them.
great news? But yeah, I understand. Yeah.
More like great value news, like the Walmart generic right. brand of most products.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Axeman still has his own apartment, I guess. I guess he's paying ghost rent with his ghost money at his ghost apartment. No one has evicted him. Although, how would you?
For what it's worth, I think he's making real money using his real saxophone playing abilities for some reason. He's decided he has to do this, even though he's a ghost, which to me at least would be like, I'm not getting a job. If I'm a ghost, you can't get me to get a job.
I guess I'm hung up on the logistics. Like, who hired him? He doesn't have a social security number, I assume, because he's a ghost. So, like...
Oh, if it's just, like, a jazz musician at a restaurant, yeah, they just pay him under the table.
Also, it's New Orleans, where it's like, yeah, that kind of thing, you know, is funny.
That's fair.
A lot of people don't have social security numbers. That's just, you know, what happens sometimes.
Yeah. He owns his own apartment, or like, I guess no one's checked on the guy who he killed who does live there. And he must just pay rent in cash, I guess. They don't care. And Fiona is over there. I assume, based on the context clues, that they just had sex because she's like putting her stockings back on. And he's like, do it a little slower. And while he's playing the saxophone. Great. Great scene. Thanks, American Horror Story.
Thanks for this.
Yeah. And then he starts giving this fucking weird monologue about my grandpa had a farm back in the 1930s, and then we're gonna go live on the farm, and you're gonna be a farm wife, and we're gonna no more killing and no more witch.
I legitimately love that, by the way. Thank you, Liz.
Yeah, that was like a really accurate read too. And you know, it was clearly two of us more equipped for the voice work, but you handled it. And I think that's great. Every time you do the X-Men, I'm like, I'll stand back and let the professional handle this.
It's me, the X-Men.
I mean, that's how he's doing it. I'm saying he's doing what he's doing.
That's the thing. You're not wrong. Yeah.
Spot on, really.
It's shockingly accurate. It's just very funny here. You just... So he legitimately does say, though, like, hey, let's move to my farm upstate. Just like, we'll kill your little supreme thing first, and I'll stop being the Axeman. But I do want to get one more in, if that's cool with you. And Fiona's like, great, I have one more for you to handle. And Yeah, they just agree to it. So Fiona's going to kill the Supreme, I guess, which based on historical evidence is not going to be a fast process or a thing she can do easily. So now we get back to where this is where Delphine gets run into by Spalding's ghost, who just offers a, hey, go buy me a super rare doll and I'll let you kill Marie Laveau. I think this is also where they show... They gave him, like, weird, like, gross demon nails in this. And I don't think he had that before. I think he just had regular human hands. And for some reason, they were like, what if people forget Spalding was, like, a little gross? Oh, I know. Let's give him gross demon claws. Like, but why? Is that part of becoming a ghost? Your nails get bad?
Next question.
Yeah, and so Delphine's just like... Delphine is just like, okay, yeah, I'll do it. No problem. I'll go figure it out. And now Queenie's back home, I guess, because everyone over at Marie Laveau's shop is dead and Marie Laveau's over here. So I guess that means Queenie logistically has to be back here too.
Sure.
And yeah, so she walks in, she's taking her room back from Misty and complaining. Cordelia like is like, hey, we were pretty sure you were dead, and Queenie's like, I got a new power. And I was like, was it transferring a wound you took to someone else? Because that was that was your power. Yeah. Like that was what she did. That was her one move.
Yeah, that's yep.
Like the fucked up like interpretation of this is that she's referring to whatever the fuck she did that revived Delphine with, or not revived her, but like somehow transmuted her body back together. Cause it straight up does not explain how Queenie did it. It's just, oh no, yeah, Queenie did it. Queenie just reaffixed Delphine's head back onto her body. That's just a thing she can do. No, like, even one of the characters even says, like, there's no, like, scarring or anything either. And I'm like, yeah, only Misty was able to do that because of the mud. So how did Queenie do it?
Well, 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 if it isn't another set of Dragon Balls here to ruin the tension.
And these are the Namekians. These are the ones from Namek that do the super wishes.
This MF-er not only is able to pick other people up with no scarring, no problems, no fuss, no muss. Also, she just can't die. So she's like managed to invalidate it up front, which I think is an exciting new twist on the formula. It's very Marie Laveau core. afterwards, this is where Cordelia is making the smoothie, comma, for her eyes. Yeah. That's the thing she was making earlier. She's like pounding a bunch of different plants together, looking at it real intensely, making a thick brown slurry. And then she like spreads it all over her eyes and then starts crying because like, I guess the only way to fully have the sight is to put smoothie over your eyes and then fucking stab yourself in the eyes with garden shears. Which, damn girl, the sight wasn't good. It wasn't a good ability.
Not like, at all.
I legitimately, as just a regular human being in his day to day, would rather have actual physical sight personally than the sight. Like, if I was forced to choose between the two, I'd be like, regular eyeballs, please. Like, they seem way more useful.
Not only that, but you can keep your regular sight and have like a billion other tools at your disposal for discernment, like the bathtub or
like a bathtub,
a truth spell. Like, you don't gotta do this.
Or asking a ghost.
Yeah.
Which they did.
Also, it's kind of like a slap in the face to Myrtle, you know, or maybe even the other two witches, you know, because it's just kind of like, hey, it's like when you see, like, you know, your friend, like, wearing the jacket that you gave as a gift to another friend, and you're like, well, if you didn't, you know, like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Yeah, especially after Myrtle gave her that whole speech about, like, maybe you should just be a flight attendant. Myrtle's like, are you fucking kidding me? I killed those two people to give you new eyeballs and told you to give the sight up, and you still gouged your eyes out anyway.
I should have been in a lot of trouble for that, Delia, you know, but strangely I'm not. So,
but the two people I killed are the only two people who can hold me accountable, so it's fine. I was the third one, and I'm not going to hold myself accountable, so I don't give a shit.
Also, they're not alive, I guess, anymore, but like, or they're not, or, I, they're still alive, right? So, yeah, whatever, it doesn't matter. Who cares?
Yeah. So yeah, you would be thinking Myrtle is probably going to be pissed, and she is. It cuts to her like waiting outside of Delia's room, and Fiona comes in like, "What the fuck happened to my daughter?" And Myrtle's like, "Your daughter's a hero. She gouged her own eyes out to try and save the coven." I'm like, I don't think doing one very stupid thing that barely affects anybody counts as being a hero. Making a bad decision with a good reason doesn't make you a hero, I don't think.
Usually the heroic sacrifice does save the day. That's part of the that's part of the heroism. That's like part of the implied thing is that you're like doing it with purpose and to save the day. So the big problem here is not only do we have multiple ways to discern who did crimes that don't involve gouging our own eyes out, we solved this and we know who did it and we confirmed it 3+ times and we already had a plan together to kill the person who did it, explicitly making them kill themselves. Now, I'm guessing we're just going off of the whole like witch law thing where like, well, she managed to float in, or she floated when we threw her in the lake like a duck. So she's not a witch. So she must be innocent. But like, she is a witch, we know, and we know she did it. So why is everyone just like, well, we tried once and we didn't get her, so guess she's fine now. Guess we need to stop trying to kill her. Like, what happened? Did you all forget? Did you forget that she just killed Nan?
Yeah, and even if like the other implications, like, oh, Delia like gouged her eyes out not because of the needing the sight for Fiona, but because of like, oh, they're being hunted by witch hunters, which is already pretty stupid because the witch hunters aren't much of a threat. But also, They know everything about the witch hunters. She Googled it and got all of the information within a roughly 20 seconds. Turns out
they have a meeting set up.
Turns out Hank was actually like the reverse of being a mole. That he was actually the link that gave them all the information about the witch hunters.
You know, can I bring up, so eye stuff really gets to me, you know, as far as like gross horror special effects shit, and the anticipation of the scene, which I will give them, is pretty good, you know, of her like getting ready to stab herself in the eye is way better than if you keep your eyes open and watch the payoff, because it's like, these are gardening shears, they're pretty rough, she puts it in her eye and it like kind of like doesn't really go all the way in and it like spurts out. It just, but it's like, it's not really a very good, it seems like a kind of an practical effect, or an okay practical effect that they added special effect, like CG to, and it like doesn't, I don't know, it like, it looked pretty bad, I thought, to be
this
honest.
This is one of like the 5 scenes that has bloodsplatter.jpg.
Yes,
just kind of
exactly
smacked
it
over it. And it literally is. Like, there's a scene later where the Axeman is axing somebody. And you can tell that it's literally just like a transparent GIF of blood splatter, because the blood splatter, A, looks like a looping blood splatter, and B, it's going the wrong direction from where the blood would be splattering if you were hit there. it's just kind of going kind of a random direction, if we're being honest, and it doesn't hit anything. That's like, that's the real giveaway, is that it doesn't make contact with anything. It just exists and then isn't there anymore. There's a lot of that in this episode, of just like generic blood splatter looping gif over every scene where there's gore, which they haven't done at all. Like, sometimes they'll do that. Sometimes there will just be like, for example, in Asylum, that one opening sequence where there was just like the still image of that one guy that they had like not moving in a moving shot, or like a really bad fire special effect that they've pasted over something. Like, every so often they're like, fuck it. We'll just Google like fire transparent GIF and just put that over it. That's special effects, right? I don't know if they just don't have a special effects guy or what. They do, clearly, because there is like I mean, I guess that could be a practical effect. With the scenes where Delphine's just ahead, like, clearly that could just be Kathy Bates under a table with her head sticking through a hole, I guess. But yeah, they do that every so often, and this episode is so bad about it. Yeah, it's not great. Also, like, is there not a spell to blind yourself or, like, an easier way to do this? Could you not have, like, knocked yourself out beforehand and then asked someone else to do it? I'm sure Madison would have gouged your eyes out if you asked nicely. Like, she seems like she'd be into that. Like,
yeah, honestly.
feels very weird. I think it is very much so kind of like what you just said of, like, eye stuff in horror is, like, one of, like, the top cringe-inducing things. Like, not cringe, like, oh, you're so cringe, and I'm based, but real cringe.
Like a physical revulsion to, like, perceiving what the event would feel like and applying it to your own body mentally. So you're just like, ooh, like watching a guy get kicked in the nuts real hard.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like a wince. It makes you wince, and it makes you, like, feel icky.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah.
So it's just, it's a cheap, in this scene, sometimes it's not, but, like, in this scene particularly, it's a very cheap, like, a revulsion thing.
Ever since Dead Space just hit a perfect needle directly into the camera, slowly, like, framed perfectly in every way, shape, or form, they all just kind of look bad now, this, like, pivot, especially, of just, like, she's kind of over here, and she kind of gesticulates towards her eye, and there's, like, some JPEGs. Yeah, it's not good.
Like Slow Beef said, there is some buildup to it where she's, like, rubbing the goo around her eyes, and she's, like, very clearly, the music is really insistent that something nefarious is about to happen, because, like, she's just rubbing her eyes, and the music is like, oh, this means it's bad. She's rubbing her eyes, and it's bad. And then, like, it gets real close to her eyes, and she starts getting worked up and, like, starts crying, and you're like, uh-oh, she's gonna gouge your eyes out. And then it pulls away to a wide shot of her, like, a very wide shot, very far away, of her holding the shears. And I was like, oh, well, it was kind of effective when it was just her crying, rubbing it on her eyes, because it was like, she's obviously working up the nerve to do something awful, and then it just makes her do a different thing that completely deflates the whole scene.
I think it's like the tension's great in it, honestly. I'll give them credit for that part. That, and it's tough to pull that off, I think, once you've built up that tension, because then it's like, oh man, what are we gonna do here? But then it's just like, here you go. I.jpg. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I would almost even say, like, at that point, like, don't even do the payoff, or don't even, or just, like, have her come in with, like, the eyes like that. You're like, whoa, what the fuck happened to Delia? You know what I mean? Like, just because if you can't nail that finish, then it's like, I don't know. It's like a big letdown, you know? But
yeah,
that's just me.
Incredible. Incredible work, American Horror Story. So I don't know why she needs the sight, I guess, is my biggest question. Like, why does she need? Like, so here's my, this is giving so much credit to American Horror Story, because this is what I had applied my own, like, my own interpretation when I first watched the show. Mm-hmm. This season, this was my interpretation of it, and this is extremely generous, and it is completely reliant on my interpretation to make it even, like, a little bit meaningful, which is that it was the first time Delia felt like she was worth anything, that she felt like she was useful in any capacity, because she's been a failure up until now. And then she had kind of a unique ability that no one else could have, except for that everybody else gets it, basically, in a different way. So it was more so like a character growth thing of, like, oh, she had one meaningful ability finally, and then she, like, imagine if Zoe wasn't this weird character that just suddenly decided she did everything and she only had demon coochie. Like, she'd be pretty hype if she found out she had a different power, I think. She still doesn't, by the way. Zoe still doesn't have any more powers. She just doesn't care. So that's my, like, extremely gracious interpretation of the only reason why Delia would care that much about getting the sight back, because it's functionally nothing. It's literally nothing when we have so many other resources at our disposal, and we already have all of the information we need to solve all of our mysteries. We already have all the Blue's Clues. We don't need another one. Yeah, anyway, Delphine found the doll, the really rare, hard-to-find doll that Spalding wanted. With no Google or anything, she just wandered and out into New Orleans.
Managed to pay for it by selling all of the silverware in the house, which, to me, again, goes American Horror Story. How many people do you think have, like, silverware that's actually made of silver and worth thousands of dollars in their home? How many people do you think that is, realistically? Because that it seems like a lot is what you think, which, I gotta say, I've never seen in my time on this planet Earth. I don't know if I've ever met a single person who's like, oh, yeah, we have like a full set of like silver ass silver. And this is including people I know who had fine china and cabinets for their fine china. Like,
it's, not only that, like, I don't know in present day, I don't even know who I would go sell silver to, like, without Googling it. Like, I could not just walk out of my house right now and be like, yeah, I know where to go to sell silver. Like, I would need to look up on my phone where I could sell silver in my area. I wouldn't just be like, yeah, I'm going to Walmart.
This is a good time to introduce our new sponsors, WeBuySilver.com, here on the yeah. podcast. Don't go to that URL. I didn't check. But I just made the joke blindly. Careful, everyone. But...
Yeah, and like, I don't know if pawn shops buy silver, and even if they do, Delphine doesn't know what a pawn shop is. She's been underground for 200 years. Like,
I think that's the biggest, yeah. Like, she's not in a position to know how to, like, she's not Googling that. You know, that's not a Delphine move, so, and, yeah.
I mean, the other thing is, like, how did she figure out where the doll was? Because I think the easy answer is, like, oh, Spalding told her where it was, which raises the question, why didn't Spalding get it for himself before he died? Like, because he acts like it was, like, the one thing he ever wanted in life. And it's like,
yeah,
well, you knew where to get it, obviously. Like, why didn't you just do this? Why are you asking for it now after you died? Like, all right, whatever, Skyrim, like, quest giver NPC number 486. Like, whatever. I better get a cool mace out of this. Anyway, she does. She does find the super rare doll. Spalding is super jazzed about it. And then he's like, okay, here is the rare magical item you'll need to kill Marie Laveau, the immortal voodoo woman. And then he, like, has a little basket with a blanket over it. And then he slowly pulls the blanket back to reveal a box of Benadryl. Which is the funniest punchline I can possibly imagine. And it's going to only get funnier.
Yeah, like when she has a moment of like, what is this? Benadryl. And he just goes, shh, don't say its name. It's too powerful. And that absolutely killed me. I was like, okay, up to this point, this was like a little dumb. This is now officially a bit where you're just mocking the racist lady to her face, which I'm glad someone's doing it. Why Spalding, though? Why Spalding?
Spalding secretly based.
Yeah, since when?
Also, like, that's the funniest part is, like, as far as we know, like, the only actual bad thing that Spalding's ever done has been cover for Fiona. Like, all of the things he says that he did were lies for Fiona, and, like, he's never actually physically done anything bad. He's just a weird dude with a bunch of dolls. Like, that's literally it, is he's just a fucking weirdo who, A, didn't have a tongue for the longest time, and B, lived in the attic with a bunch of dolls. And, like, the Madison thing was, like, weird, but, like, I mean, he didn't do anything, like, super fucked up or evil with her body like he said he did. He just made her into a doll. Like, he didn't have anything else to do with it. Like, apparently you're not allowed to bury bodies here, else there'll be a ghost here forever. Why she wasn't a ghost here, who fucking knows? They don't know their own rules, and neither do I. But he is a ghost, a real tangible ghost that can physically touch people, because we'll know that by the end of the episode. The Benadryl will have a payoff. Don't worry. But downstairs, it's time for Myrtle to play the theremin again. Great. Theremin mention again. Myrtle has her hell instrument and she's playing it. And Zoe comes in and is like, what do you want? And she's like, Myrtle is like, Zoe, it's incredibly important you take this movie ticket and pawn it.
or a concert ticket. So far, so good.
Yeah. so that you and Kyle can run away from the house? ? You're going to get on a bus and leave because you guys are young and in love. And it's very important you get away. Fuck all the other girls in this house.
It's the only way, darling. If you don't leave, then it's all over.
Like, what are you talking about?
Seriously.
It doesn't make any sense. You haven't talked, at least on camera, you haven't spoken with Zoe, like,
right,
at all. Like, yeah. You're not, you don't have a relate. It's not like Cordelia where you're like, imply there's a relationship, darling. Like, it's not that. You can't do that. It's just, Zoe, I need you to run away. Why? Trust me. Trust me, bro.
Yeah. And Zoe, like, pushes back against it. She's like, no, I'm committed to the coven. I'm like, fucking what coven, bro?
Yeah.
Like, the people in this house are barely roommates with each other. Like, what are you talking about?
My good friends who try to, like, go down on my boyfriend or tell me that they're really the supreme or just fuck off and leave and think I'm racist. My sisters.
Force me to defend myself with a chainsaw, which is nonsense.
Yeah. And then finally Myrtle, like, convinces her, and she's like, okay. Anyway, it's time for the climax of this episode, which is the meeting with the witch hunters. holy shit, the next 5 minutes of television are insane. So it's time for a literal board meeting between the witch hunters and the witches. They're in, like, a boardroom at Checks Notes, nondescript business building, I guess.
.com, yeah.
Yeah, .com. I guess maybe like the boardroom meeting of like a Hilton, like a hotel.
It's like a really nice WeWork.
Yeah. Unfortunately, has no one else around.
I'm going to say this. You could do that, right? Like, there's conferences and things at nice hotels, not for like seven people. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make any, that costs a ton of money to like do that. So either there's a useless spell going on or we didn't need to do this. Guess what I'm going with. But anyway.
Yeah. And show. Like the witch hunters are like, hee hee hee, time to get them to sign our contract.
Right.
And then Fiona and Marie walk in with nondescript man who is making beverages. And they're like, they're just not bothered. They're completely non-bothered. And they're just shitting on the witch hunters, just flexing on them. Like, Emeril Lagasse's making us dinner tonight. Just, like, literally flexing on them for no reason. And the witch hunters are like, oh, do you want to check us for guns? And they're like, LOL, Lamau, you guys are dog shit witch hunters. We don't give a fuck. And I'm like, well,
they're not wrong.
Yeah. That's true, but you are susceptible to gun. If any of these men were competent, they could just pull out a gun and shoot you.
And even if you're saying, like, Marie Laveau is immortal, you can be immortal and still full of lead and full of holes, and I can't imagine it's terribly pleasant, you know?
No, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You can still just shred someone's body to pieces with a few hundred rounds of ammunition, which, if every guy in this room was armed and just turned and fired... Yeah, that's about what you're dealing with.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It would not be a good time.
Maybe I should clarify also for listeners who aren't watching the show. When I say the witch hunters are in this room, I mean like 15 of them. I don't mean like just those two guys.
Men in business suits, probably concealed carry. Yeah.
Oh, not probably. Spoiler, they are. They are all strapped.
Oh, yeah, good point.
It's not a maybe. They are all holding guns. We'll
see
them in a
second. I forgot they had it because of how bad they do.
And not only, also, like, then if you are concealed carry, why are you saying, like, aren't you going to check us for guns? Because if I have the gun, I'm like, where did we offer that? did we not have a plan here, guys? You know, but...
This is why I say that Hank is not the exception. He is the rule. Yeah, no, they all have guns, but that's not relevant until later when they all beef it at the same time. Yeah, and then like they're like, well, here's a paper we want you to sign. There's a lot of people out of jobs. Isn't that important? You broke our company. Isn't that important to you? There's so many innocent people, and they're like, they're fucking collateral. Maybe they shouldn't be working for witch hunters. I don't know. And Fiona's like, all right, we'll sign your stupid little paper, but you have to give me your house. Also, the truce is for forever, because they want the truce to be for 100 years. And Fiona's like, Lamau, no, give me your house, and Marie Laveau wants a private jet. And businessman.com is like, no, my house and my jet. And that's so, no, I love those things. And Fiona's like,
you have a big major corporation. Like, you can, you have money is the idea.
Yeah,
that you're
that's
to
the whole thing is like when you're bargaining for what is presumably like at least a $10 billion corporation, complaining about something that's like a couple million is like actually just stupid.
Yeah.
Like, it's actually just very stupid to do. Yeah.
Yeah. And then after he whines about his house and his jet, Fiona's like, all right, counteroffer. The Axeman. And then the Axeman locks the door as if that would stop 15 grown men from getting out of the room. Somehow.
Locks it from the inside. Mm-hmm. Because you cannot you can't lock a conference room from the outside. That's the most insane fire hazard I've ever heard in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely not.
Yeah. And then I know what you're thinking. Well, it's just what Axeman. Like, yeah, he's a ghost or whatever. But like 15 armed men aren't going to get owned by an old man with an axe, right? Bad
and
news.
And one of them would have the thought of, well, if I kill the witch, the spell ends. So they would just turn their gun at Fiona and unload and be like, well, that should solve the problem. Like, these are witch hunters, so they know it's magic. So you can't be like, well, they were just caught unaware. Like, no, they were not. That's the one thing they were ready for explicitly.
Yeah, these are not just businessmen. These are, again, witch hunters.
Some of you might also be saying, like, is the Axeman pulling out some John Wick kind of shit? No! He just, like, goes around the room kind of slowly, if we're being honest. Like,
yeah, he just kind of walks up behind people and is like, bada-bing! And then just, like, puts an axe in their back, and that's it.
It's really not, yeah, it's, like, not even a little bit, like, impressive or weird. They just seem like, wow, you guys, like, have you used guns or seen them in movies, at least? Like, how is this working?
I think just winging it with a gun could probably do better than these 15 well-trained men who are, again, cannot reiterate enough,
with, like, witch hunters. I think you with a particularly sturdy stick would do better than these dudes.
Like, even, like, none of them, like, even try, like, a little dodge roll or something. They're all just like, oh, shit, where'd I put my gun? Oh, yeah, my waistband. Okay, wait, did I just leave over it? Oh, I'm dead, you know?
Oh, no,
and,
like, axe.
And then he has this tiny ass axe too, right? If you've forgotten, it's like a little hand axe. And there's like one guy across the counter, and he throws it, and it kills him. Which is like this is not an action movie. Like, knock it off.
Dead by Daylights, this guy and, across the table.
But then, and then my absolute favorite part then is after they're all dead, and it's just the main board guy, like Hank's dad, there, right? He like walks over to get a cup of coffee. Axeman, I guess, knows he's not going to do anything, and then he goes, well played. Like, what are you talking about? That wasn't like a plan or a move. You just had a guy kill you all. Like, that was like a, like, what do you mean well played? Like, you just played really badly, actually. Like, what do you
mean? That would just be like sitting down and being like, whew, sloppy shit on my part, which is what he should have said.
Yeah.
I am truly an idiot.
Maybe my son was right. Maybe we should have just married the witches.
I should not have just been doing shit. My son was right. I was just doing shit arbitrarily, and now I'm getting hit. This sucks. So Hank's dad's last words after he sat down and is accepted that, you know, he's lost is, I think Fiona just straight up asks, any last words? And he just goes, go to hell, witch bitch.
Which is bitch.
It doesn't work. Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you also are like, witch bitch is like not anything. Like, it doesn't sound good. It doesn't hit good. It doesn't have some like implication. Because if you call a woman a witch in a derogatory fashion, that's already the same meaning.
Yeah.
Like, that's already, like, the problem is we already use the word witch for that. Like, that's already, so it's just like, yeah, it doesn't sound
like,
good.
Just saying, like, bitch would have also been, like, equally nasty. But, like, it has the same mouthfeel and ear feel as when Delia was like, I bet you think you're a hot shit witch. Like, can we just stop trying to shove witch into these, like, into these euphemisms? Like,
he
it
might
makes
as well.
Them all weird.
He must have just been like, well, life's a witch, right, everybody? Time to go. You know, like, it's crazy. Because, like, it sounds like he fucked up at the last minute.
Also, like, he's supposed to be, like, this grand CEO at the head of a major corporation. So, like, you would expect him to be a little bit more clever or delicate with his words,
right?
In some way, shape, or form. Like, have something a little, you know, more tactful to say. Something a little more calculated. But no, they just have him suck the whole way from cradle to grave.
Hey,
the first time he's on the show to the last time he's on the show. He just sucks ass.
Did you have any last words? Hey, Fiona, go fuck yourself. Like, you know, it's like it's stupid.
That would even be better. Yeah, that would at least be, like, very direct, like, bringing down the facade and just being like, God damn it. But
this
is really just like, I have one more little stab at you. From hell's heart, I stab at thee, witch bitch. And it's like, all right, you weird little guy. Have fun.
This is like he stood up and his pants just fell down. You got any last words? Yes, I do. Aww.
Oh, shoot, my limes. All my limes fell out of my pocket. Oh no. And I mentioned in the last episode that the actor either has a very, like, thick accent or a speech impediment that makes it very hard to take him seriously when he's trying to be, like, evil, because it just sounds like a guy trying not to have an accent, or maybe trying to have it. Maybe that guy doesn't have an accent and he's trying to have one and that's why it's fucked up. But it really deflates the go to hell witch bitch line when it sounds like a guy trying to do, like, the impression of a 7-year-old boy. It's a lot. Marie takes a photo of this with her iPhone for some reason. I don't know who that's for. I don't know what that's about. Fiona beheads the main guy, I guess, after he says go to hell. And then the X-Man says, I love you more than jazz, baby. Or baby doll. And I'm like, whoa. You can't be saying that. Jazz is like your whole thing, man. That's like your whole deal. What the fuck?
Slow down, cling rap. You know? Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, like, oh, Jesus. Well, now who is he? If he loves her more than jazz, then who is he? He's lost his identity as a man.
I've become the Fiona man. Oh, is this how he becomes a wife guy? Is that what it is? I've stopped being the jazz man, and now I'm the wife guy.
Now I'm the witch bitch. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I didn't come out right.
I don't think that means what I think it means. And then it fasts forward to Maria and Fiona coming home, and they're drinking champagne or something in a champagne flute to celebrate the witch hunters being dead. Incredibly easy. This was, I cannot express enough to people who are just listening to this and not watching it, that scene took 13 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
The Axeman killed all the witch hunters in 13 seconds. One guy with an axe killed all of the witch hunters, which means,
yeah.
I don't know about you, I don't think they were that big of a threat, because not only is the only person who's killed a witch from their organization been fucking Hank, they also killed, like, a bunch of the wrong people up until now.
Yeah, like, so what have the witch hunters accomplished at this point? They yelled at Hank a lot. They didn't want Hank to kill everybody at Marie Laveau's shop, and he just did it anyway. They lost all their money, and now they died. So I guess, like, why were they here? Like, why did we have this plotline in the first place? Like, if they did nothing and were answered in a trivial fashion, then what's the fucking point? Why were they here? Why did we have big business, man? Did we just, like, need Marie and did we need them to team up that badly? Is that, like, what we're doing here? Because the Witch Hunter, now that it's done, which, by the way, I haven't watched the next few episodes, but I have to presume this is done because there's two episodes left and, like, they're all dead. So what the fuck? Yeah, why were they here? Like, what purpose did they serve? Just, like, narratively that we couldn't easily paper over with a single sentence change.
None. The answer's none.
I hate to give you the answer.
Okay, cool. Well, that's what I wanted to hear was none from both of you. That makes me feel much better, actually.
Yeah. Now it's time for the bit payoff, the good payoff of the episode.
Yes.
And Delphine is like, Marie's drinking the drink that I gave her. It's only a matter of time. And then I'm not making this up. Marie just slaps her on the ass. kind of for no reason. And Delphine's like, oh, you just wait until the Benadryl kicks in.
Marie's in like a silly, goofy mood after killing some witch hunters and is just playfully slapping her most hated enemy on the ass.
It's a wild vantage point, too. Like, Marie's like face down on the bed, like drunk, and like Benadryl'd the fuck up. And it's like, and then smacks the shit out of Kathy Bates' ass from the like face down position, like you would do if you were really drunk and like your partner had come home and you were like, I'm in a silly, goofy mood. And you fucking smacked him on the ass. And Delphine responds to that by stabbing Marie in the chest. And Marie's like, excuse me? Did you forget that I'm fucking immortal? What the fuck is wrong with you? And Delphine's like, nuh-uh. And then she throws the box of Benadryl at Marie and she's like, the magic just takes time to work. And Marie says what is maybe the funniest line I've ever heard in this show, which is, that ain't magic, that's an antihistamine. Yeah, this episode's good, actually, I think. And then Marie's like, well, now I'm gonna fuck you up because I'm not dead, I'm not dying. And Delphine's like, oh no, I've been had. And she like starts skittering out of the room. And Marie's chasing her, and they get to the stairwell, and then Marie gets bonked on the head by a porcelain doll from off screen, and she tumbles down the stairs and is unconscious, and then Delphine looks up at the top of the stairs. Spalding is, I can't verbalize it in a way that is insistent enough to tell you how funny the shot of Spalding is. He's just standing at the top of the stairs holding the baby doll upright next to him, like he's gonna talk through it like a ventriloquist. And he just looks so pleased with himself. Like, he is so pleased with himself. And he's like, she's not dead. And Delphine's like, what the fuck, Spalding? And Spalding's like, Lamau, I don't know, just bury her alive or something. You fucking idiot. And then he just kind of saunters off, which is so fucking funny. It is, I can't express through this podcast how funny this scene is. Spalding is a treat, is a delight in this scene. He is so fucking funny. Remember, like, when Larry was a little nasty man in season one, like at the very beginning? Mm-hmm. Very, very much so that same energy. Of just little nasty guy who's just getting up to some mischief. Incredible. The best thing that's happened to Delphine's character so far. I think they should have done this more, actually. I love antagonistic Spalding towards Delphine. And then he fucks off. And Delphine's like, well, I guess I gotta go bury her alive or whatever. And then Spalding goes upstairs, so like he kind of like vaguely in passing is like, yeah, I needed Marie Laveau out of my way, thanks, go bury her alive or whatever. Also, of course Benadryl wouldn't kill her, dipshit, like of course not. And he goes upstairs to reveal dressed as a baby, cannot forget that he's dressed as a baby, and he's hanging out with the baby that Marie Laveau stole. And he's like, this kicks ass, a baby doll, but it's real. I didn't know they made these. You guys hear about this? They make real ones of these. That's so cool. And he's just happy to be there. He's honestly, it's fucked up, but like, honestly, in this house, the baby is probably safest with Spalding, if we're being honest. Like, you know, out of all the people, Spalding's probably going to take the best care of it.
You know, you're right, actually. I didn't even think of that, but you're absolutely right.
Yeah, the weird fucked up baby doll man is probably going to take better care of that baby than anybody else in the house, actually. So, yeah. Also, nobody tried to, like, take the baby back to where it came from. They're just like, no, we have this baby now. And he's super into it. He's like, hell yeah, I've got a real baby doll now. Anyway, it's time for the last scene of the episode, which is edited in the funniest fucking way possible after the dumb dialogue. It's the final Kyle scene of the episode. Zoe's packing her shit to leave with Kyle, and Kyle is a human man now who can articulate his feelings like a human man with feelings and thoughts that he can speak like a normal person. She is ready to go. He doesn't want to. He's like, I think we should break up. I don't want to hurt you. She's like, I'm not afraid of you. And he says it's not her decision, which means he has some agency, finally. And then she starts talking to him like he's a toddler and just keeps saying the words more happy love over and over again. And I went back to the other episodes where they were showing him like Cocomelon videos. That's not anything we ever see. That's not like an established phrase that we know of that they like said to each other. So her just being like more happy love. What the fuck?
What are you talking about, lady?
Yeah. Zoe, what the fuck is wrong with you? What are you saying? Because she's insisting it like we, the audience, are supposed to be like, oh, that's what she said when he was in toddler mode.
The thing I was in toddler mode and you still believed in me, even though I was in toddler mode, I said this over and over, but like you didn't. But you did not do that.
Not on camera,
at least you did not do that.
And also, he's an adult man now who speaks regularly, and you don't have to talk to him like he's 4 years old.
Yeah. It's very weird, and it feels like someone having a manic breakdown. in context, it's very strange.
It's a very much "this sucks, actually" kind of thing. Yeah.
And he decides to emphasize how much he wouldn't hurt her by grabbing her aggressively by the back of the head. And this is supposed to indicate to us that everything is good now, actually. remember how our last episode, I said that some of these scenes are edited in the most absolutely fuck-ass ways I've ever seen in my life? This is one of them. The last scene of the episode is Zoe and Kyle running through a bus station like they're being chased by a ghost. in a weird slow-mo, like, pan out zoom moving camera dolly, like it's a John Wick action scene, but there is, and I cannot overstate, nothing happening. There is no urgency.
So it, to me, this was filmed almost one-to-one the same as there was a period in Doctor Who where half the action sequences, if not more, were them just running away from a thing, and they had to like figure out how to make it look dramatic and tense when it was just like Benedict Bumberbatch or whatever running down a hallway in a panic, and like how to make it seem intense. And this is exactly that, like with like full skewed camera angles, like a rotating air cam, like pulling back and that. And yeah, no, there's no threat. They don't need, honestly, the threat is that a security guard's going to walk up and be like, hey, you don't run in the airport. Like, are you late for your flight? Like,
yeah. Are you late for your bus? That's like not even close to leaving yet. Cause like they have plenty of time to get on the bus, sit down.
Yeah, you can't rush a bus. They won't let you. They don't fucking care. You can sit on that bus 5 minutes early and be like, it's go time, old man. And it'll be like, bus has a schedule.
Yeah. It's not go time at all, but, you know.
And then they sit on the bus. The last shot is just panning out of them sitting on the bus. The door doesn't close, so, like, they're not late for the bus or anything. They're just getting on it.
Hey, pop quiz hotshot, both of you. Does Zoe or Kyle leaving change any major story elements for any of the plots?
Hmm.
I mean,
no.
It changes the Kyle plot. I say, shrugging, as though there is one.
The Kyle plot, I say, breaking four of my fingers doing quotes as hard as I can.
I mean, as much as holy we hate shit. It, they have insisted that there's a Kyle plot this whole season. They are insistent that there is a Kyle plot. We got to see his fucked up mom with dreadlocks smoking weed. They are so insistent that Kyle is a subplot God. This season.
You're so right. Why? They just want him so bad. They're like, we need to have Evan Peters as a sad boy or else the show doesn't function. He's a load-bearing sad boy.
Oh, that's true. I was going to say, no, Ty, that's not true. He wasn't a sad boy in season two, but like he was like a dumb sad boy in season two. He was a little more competent, but like in an earnest way. He was less sad and more just easily confused, and like you could jingle your keys in front of him and he'd be like, what? What? But you're right. That's the end of the episode. The witch hunters are gone, so that plot's done. it was easier than we thought it would be, turns out. turns yes. out we didn't need that plot at all.
So yeah, full recap of this episode. We saw some backstory of Delphine that we didn't care about. Hank's dad was sad. We don't care about. Zoe confirmed again who the killers were, which we don't care about, especially now that she has just fucking left with Kyle, the other person who had confirmed who the killers were.
Mm-hmm.
The Axeman immediately eliminated the Delphi Corporation, meaning they were never relevant.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, and Queenie is home, I guess, and they just have Queenie go, I'm home, and also I have powers. And then they just don't interact with Queenie for the rest of the episode. They just have her walk in and be like, fuck you, I have a new spell. Well, bye.
Spalding is back, and he's better than ever. That's maybe the only good takeaway, is that Spalding's back, yeah. And he's an antagonist towards Delphine.
I was just like thinking through the whole episode and legitimately trying to figure out if any plot had moved forward. And I think the answer is like, no.
Delia's blind again. We don't know if she has the sight or anything, but we know she's blind again.
Right. That's cool.
Is it?
Like, that's fine. Sure.
Why did we unblind her is my question. Because like that didn't really... Like, I'll be honest, I don't remember. I do know some things that happened, but I don't remember if this does actually work, giving her the sight back. If it did, why did we give her her eyes back to begin with? Because, like, what did we accomplish by having two episodes where she could see?
We had to make it so people would stop asking questions about the council or why the council exists or how the council is relevant or how it functions or how a council would exist without the Supreme, the most powerful member, being on said council.
I mean, I honestly think that's it. The two purposes that I think it serves is A, it needed to eliminate the council because that was a plot hole. And then B, they needed her to not have the sight for two episodes because that would have like completely invalidated most of the right. plot, turns out. Also, I think a secret third reason was that they didn't want to have to keep having Sarah Paulson pretend she was blind for these scenes. So, like, they're
I'm
like,
getting
we need
sick of these cataracts.
Yeah, we don't want to do her eye makeup. And also, it fixed. That's another thing we don't really talk about enough is that giving her those other people's eyeballs fixed like all the acid scarring around her face. Which I don't think is a thing that would happen if you got new eyeballs. I don't think it would fix, like, the skin and the nerve damage that the acid did to your ocular region. I think it would just give you new eyeballs.
Oh, well, yeah.
Well,
but that's it. That's the episode. Yay. Go to Hell is the next episode.
that's
the title.
Feel.
They
that's,
just put Go to Hell, which is
appropriate.
I guess because Hank's dad said it, but like,
it no, it's worse than Hank's that. It's worse than that.
Yeah,
it's worse.
Yeah.
I know why it's called that.
I
it's worse.
Too.
It's so much worse than you think it's going
to
be.
Someone's actually going to go to hell. No. Well, until next time, dear listener, you can see how bad it gets because apparently it's worse than I thought. Until next time, everyone.
Later.
Bye.
Bye.